Up next, we continue with the Apollo 11 mission, the first manned landing on the moon.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
If the truth were known, we really delayed this launch so we could get the burritos on time.
I figured that.
The flight director says get back in.
We lost the flight plan out the window.
On all three networks, you replaced all the kitty cartoons.
Houston, we've had a problem.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
I was strolling on the moon one day.
Counter, go and throttle up.
The Earth from here is a grand oasis of the big vastness of space.
You're listening to The Space Program, NASA's past, present, and future.
We continued the flight of Apollo 11. This is Rich Kirshner reporting. Following the successful launch at 9:32 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on July 16, 1969, astronauts Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, and Buzz Aldrin were on their way to the moon to attempt the first manned lunar landing. The spacecraft entered lunar orbit at 1:28 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on July the 19th. During the second lunar orbit, a live color telecast of the lunar surface was made. A service propulsion system burn placed the spacecraft in a circularized orbit, after which Aldrin entered the lunar module Eagle for 2 hours of housekeeping. At 8:50 a.m. on July 20th, Armstrong and Aldrin re-entered Eagle and checked out the systems. They performed a maneuver at 1:11 p.m. to separate Eagle from the command module Columbia and began their descent to the moon. Mike Collins remained on board Columbia and monitored their descent.
Roger, Eagle, time dot.
Roger, how does it look?
The Eagle has wings.
Roger.
Looking good.
Roger, Neil, we got if you give us poo and data, we got the loads for you.
In an interview with Flight Director Gene Kranz, I asked him about the descent and the landing on the moon. With the exception of Apollo 13, what was the most challenging event you had ever had to deal with as a flight director in mission control?
We're coming up on the 50th anniversary. That was Apollo 11. All the people that you see the movies, they got this new one coming out, First Man, etc. Really doesn't talk about what happened during the descent to the lunar surface. And they don't talk about how close we were to losing that, basically having to abort the mission. They only talk about the last 3 minutes when the crew's down towards the surface, but they time that we got started coming downhill to go into the moon, we had major communications problems. We couldn't communicate with the crew. They couldn't communicate with us. I made the decision to commit to the descent betting in the come line that we'd solve the communications problem in the first 5 minutes, and if not, then we'd have to abort. We were working that, and with the intermediate trajectory data we got from the spacecraft, one of my controllers basically identified that we had some kind of an aberration in the trajectory. We're going to land long. And basically, due to the radio component velocity, when he was looking at the inertial components of the maneuver that had been performed where we were right now, he said we're halfway to our abort limit. Abort is not a term you lose casually in mission control. Well, we were starting to work that, but again, we didn't have the continuous data we needed for about the first 3 to 4 minutes, and we'd relay instructions from mission control to Mike Collins and the command module. He'd then pass it on to the crew. But I continued to press. We got enough data, so I felt confident in continuing on. And about the time now, we're getting ready to get landing radar, because the crew started their descent based on altitude information that we had given them from the ground. But now we needed absolute measurements from the lunar module to the lunar surface. So we're waiting for that landing radar to come in when we start getting a series of computer program alarms. Well, the thing that was interesting, and I'm doing a speech up at the Smithsonian in November, did some research there that normally the software that we had on board the lunar module was using basically about almost 70% central processing unit time just through the descent. So anything that was abnormal raised that, and we had basically a series of messages coming in from the rendezvous radar that said, hey, you're not sending me any data, which increased it now up to about 83% CPU. And then Buzz Aldrin was asking for some data out of the computers, what the altitude was. Key thing is, and several times we basically faulted down in the computer to only addressing the guidance and navigation problems. And if those guys went south on us, we were going to board. So basically, all through the landing, we're now trying to solve the problems working around program alarms we got. And normally around 15,000 feet, Neil Armstrong should be looking at his landing site so he gets some idea how he's going to maneuver to get into place. Well, by now we knew we were going to be landing long. We're going to be landing in a boulder field. But he can't look down there now. He has to keep addressing and keep trying to fly the spacecraft because it was on the ragged margin of not being able to fly. So we had that going on down there. And then we finally get the information from the ground. We get the radar updated. The computer program alarms slack off a bit. Communications are better. But now we're getting down towards the surface. And we come across, we get the glow level indication from the spacecraft. Normally, we landed on the moon on training at low level. But at low level, it's sort of like driving your car in empty. Once that is triggered in mission control, we have 120 seconds of fuel at a 30% throttle setting. So now we have Dyer and a stopwatch counting down seconds of fuel remaining as the crew's trying to come down to the surface. The time he finally landed, he had to overfly a very large crater down there. As he's getting down, if you're a pilot landing an airplane or you've ever driven in snow where the snow is blowing along the road ahead of you, you get a very funny sensation in there that you're not moving. The snow's moving at the same speed you are. And that was what Neil Armstrong was experiencing. And finally, we're now telling him he's got 60 seconds of fuel remaining and then 30 seconds of fuel remaining. And at about the time that we said 15, we recognized the crew had just landed the moon and shut down. So that's about as close as you ever want to get the first time you try to land on the moon.
And that was a 1201 alarm.
Yeah.
To expand just very slightly, you're mentioning the boulders. Was that a pre-flight imaging thing that you knew about, or did that just come up because you were saying that Neil was not looking out the window, he was looking at the instruments?
See, we had picked out the landing ellipse we had where we figured we could land is essentially about, 7 miles long and about 2 miles wide. And we thought that he could find a place to land, but if he landed right in the middle, it was very smooth. What happened due to this trajectory problem we had earlier, he's going to be landing long. Now, if he didn't have these computer program alarms, he could have recognized this, where he was going to land. And what happened, the computer would tell them that he has what they call a landing point designator. It's scribe lines in the windshield that the computer will say, if you look out the window at this scribe line number 6 or whatever it was, you'll see the landing point out there. So then the crew can maneuver to a more suitable landing point. But Neil Armstrong didn't have the option to do that because he was busy just trying to fly the airplane.
Now, he was in direct control as opposed to Buzz. He actually had the controls, right?
Basically, it was automatic throughout most of the descent because it was impossible for any person to efficiently fly because we were very propellant limited. Getting down to the surface of the moon. And it was the computer basically was doing all the flying except for one period up and away where Neil took over and checked out just all the hand controller and all the systems are going to work and then handed it back to automatic. And then once he got down close to the surface of the ground, probably about 800 to 1,000 feet, that's when he picked up. And now manually had to fly to a landing site.
History could have been totally changed had everything not fallen, the cards falling into the right spot.
You're exactly right.
At 4:18 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Neil Armstrong skillfully set the Lunar Module Eagle down in the Sea of Tranquility.
We're go. Same type. We're go.
2,000 feet. 2,000 feet. Into the ag. 47 degrees.
Roger.
47 degrees.
Eagle looking great. You're go.
Altitude 1,600. 1,400 feet. Still looking very good.
Roger. 1202. We copy it.
35 degrees. 35 degrees. 750. Coming down to 23. 700 feet, 21 down, 33 degrees. 100 feet, down at 19. 540 feet, down at 30, down at 15. 400 feet, down at 9. Gate forward. 10 and 50 feet, down at 4. 30 and a half down. 300 feet, down 3 and a half. 47 forward. Hold up. On 1 and 8. 1 and a half down. 70. Happy shadow out there. 50 down at 2 and a half. 19 forward. Altitude, velocity, light. 3 and a half down. 220 feet. 13 forward. 160 feet. 6 and a half down. 5 and a half down. 9 forward. 120 feet. 100 feet. 3 and a half down, 9 forward. 185. Okay, 75 feet. That's looking good, down a half. 6 forward.
60 seconds.
Lights on. Down 2 and a half. Forward. Forward. That's 40 feet down, 2 and a half. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2 and a half down. Fake shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward, drifting to the right a little. Down and a half.
30 seconds.
Forward. Good. Okay. Contact light. Okay, engine stop. ACA at a descent.
Auto
descent. Post control both auto. Descent engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Mission Control quickly ran a poll to see if Eagle could stay on the moon.
Okay, D1, Sabino, stay. Retro. Stay. Vital, stay. Guidance. Stay. Control. Stay. Telcom. Stay. DNC. Stay. Ecom. Stay. Surgeon. Stay. Capcom or stay for T1.
Hey, it looks like we're vending the oxidizer now.
Roger, Eagle, and you are stay for T1. Over. Eagle, you are stay for T1.
For the next 10 minutes, Armstrong and Aldrin were occupied with several post-landing procedures, reconfiguring switches and systems. Armstrong found time to report to Mission Control what he had been too busy to tell them all along during the landing, that he had manually flown the lunar module over a rock-strewn crater where the automatic landing system was taking it.
Houston, that may have seemed like a very long final phase. The auto targeting was taking us right into a football field sized crater with a large number of big boulders and rocks for about a 1 or 2 crater diameters around it. And it required us gun and P-66 and flying manually over the rock field to find a reasonably good area.
Roger, we copy. It was beautiful from here. Tranquility, over.
It looks like a collection of just about every variety of shape, angularity, granularity, but every variety of rock you could find. The color is, well, it varies pretty much depending on how you're looking relative to the zero phase point. There doesn't appear to be too much of a general color at all. However, it looks as though some of the rocks and boulders, of which there are quite a few in the near area, looks as though they're going to have some interesting colors to them, over.
Right, Tranquility, be advised, there are lots of smiling faces in this room and all over the world, over.
Capcom.
There are two of them up here.
Right, it was a beautiful job, you guys.
And don't forget one in the command module.
Right.
That last remark from Mike Collins at an altitude of 60 miles. The comments on the landing, on the manual takeover, came from Neil Armstrong.
You're listening to The Space Program.
Armstrong and Aldrin then started preparing their spacecraft for takeoff, setting up critical systems to be ready in case something happened and they had to leave the lunar surface in a hurry. Setting up the spacecraft systems took another hour and a half to complete, then they were ready to go out and explore. The flight plan called for them to eat and then rest for a few hours, but Aldrin called Mission Control to recommend starting their surface exploration an hour early. Houston concurred. Although they had been awake almost 11 hours and had gone through some stressful moments during the landing, it seemed too much to expect the first men on the moon to take a nap before they made history. Getting ready to leave the lunar module took longer than the crew had anticipated. It was after 9:30 p.m. in Houston when they opened the hatch. Armstrong carefully worked his way out onto the porch, then climbed down the ladder, pausing on the lowest rung to comment on the texture of the surface and the depth to which the footpads had penetrated.
And we're getting a picture on the TV.
You got a good picture, huh?
There's a great deal of contrast in it, and currently it's upside down on our monitor, but we can make out a fair amount of detail.
I'm at the foot of the ladder. The limb footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. I'm going to step off the limb now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. The surface is fine and powdery. I can pick it up loosely with my toe. It does adhere in fine layers, powdered charcoal, to the sole and insides of my boot.
You're listening to The Space Program.
Armstrong made a cursory inspection of Eagle, now dubbed Tranquility Base, and reported his reactions to the environment. Aldrin then lowered a camera on the lunar equipment carrier, a clothesline and pulley arrangement that seemed to be out of place in the high-technology environment of Apollo, which Armstrong immediately began using. Mission Control reminded him to scoop up a contingency sample, which he did. He noted that the collecting tool met resistance after penetrating a short distance into the surface of the material. He then stowed the sample in a bag, then he tucked it into a pocket of his suit. Aldrin then joined Armstrong on the surface, and they spent the next several minutes inspecting the landing craft and reporting of its condition, adjusting to the low lunar gravity and trying various ways of getting around on the surface.
Now I want to back up and partially close that, making sure not to lock it on my way up. Particularly good thought. That's our home for the next couple of hours. We want to take good care of it. Looks like the secondary strut have little thermal effects on it right here, Neil.
Yeah, I noticed that. Seems to be the worst, although similar effects are on all around.
The moonwalkers then held a commemorative ceremony, reading a plaque attached to the lunar module, and had a short conversation with President Richard Nixon.
For those who haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LAM. There's two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969, AD. It came in peace for all mankind. It has the crew members' signatures and the signature of the President of the United States."
Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you, over.
Would be an honor.
Go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston out.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you... For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives. And for people all over the world, I am sure they too join with the president in recognizing what an immense feat this is. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. For one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done, and one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here representing not only the United States, but man of peace of all nations, and with interest and a curiosity, and with a vision for the future. Honor for us to be able to participate here today.
And thank you very much, and I look forward, all of us look forward to seeing you on the Hornet on Thursday.
Look forward to that very much, sir.
At 12:11 a.m. Houston time, both men and their samples were back on the lunar module and the hatch was sealed. Humanity's first excursion on the surface of another celestial body had lasted 2 hours, 31 minutes, and 40 seconds. Back inside the lunar module, Armstrong and Aldrin removed their lunar surface suits and portable life support systems and used up their remaining film. Houston passed up some more instructions in preparation for liftoff and tentatively signed off for the night. But before long, Capcom Owen Garriott came on the line with some questions from scientists about the nature of the surface. 3 hours after they returned to the lunar module, the lunar explorers finally were able to turn in for a few hours of sleep. The next morning, Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins spent most of their time getting Eagle and Columbia ready for liftoff and rendezvous. The liftoff went smoothly.
Tranquility Base, Houston.
Roger, go ahead.
Roger, our guidance recommendation is pings, and you're cleared for takeoff.
Roger, understand. We're number one on the runway.
Roger.
Rate scale 25. At translation 4 jet. Balance couple on. DTCA jet. Stop push button reset. Abort stage reset. Dead band minimum. At control to mode control. Mode control auto. Move.
Crew of Eagle going through their pre-ignition checklist.
The team standing by for 2 minutes to go to guidance steering in the ags.
After rendezvous and docking, Aldrin and Armstrong passed the rock sample boxes and other items over to Collins and then climbed into the command module, where they removed their suits and stowed them in the bags provided. After jettisoning the lunar module and straightening up the command module, the three astronauts settled in for an uneventful trip back to Earth.
You're listening to The Space Program.
In the early morning hours of July 24th, 8 days, 3 hours, 18 minutes, and 18 seconds after leaving the Kennedy Space Center, Columbia splashed down into the Pacific Ocean, south of Johnston Island. Recovery crews from the USS Hornet arrived quickly and tossed the biological isolation garments into the spacecraft. This was among several procedures to prevent possible lunar contamination from harming others on Earth. After the astronauts emerged from the spacecraft, the swimmers swabbed the hatch down with an organic iodine solution. Then astronauts and recovery personnel decontaminated each other's protective garments with a sodium hypochlorite solution. The biological isolation garments were not uncomfortable in the recovery craft, but aboard the helicopter, they began accumulating heat. Both Collins and Armstrong felt that they were approaching the limit of their tolerance by the time they reached the ship. An hour after splashdown, they were inside the mobile quarantine facility. The first manned landing on the moon had achieved President John Kennedy's goal, with only 5 months to spare. This is Rich Kirshner reporting.
From the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, and God bless all of you on the good Earth.
This has been The Space Program, NASA's past, present, and future.